Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:06 p.m. the Pacific Summer Time. Today is July 16th. Well, we had a fairly meaningful move in silver in here today. It rallied intraday to break the sequence of lower rally highs, but it wasn't quite able to hold all of the gain, so it finished up on the day about 19.5 cents. The more important point is that it has bounced from the region of the trend mean, so that does hold out the hope that we are in the process of breaking the downward bias evident over the course of the last 3 years. But we're going to have to see evidence, clear evidence of that, in order to really confirm that investors are getting back on board with the bullish view for precious metals outside of the gold market. Platinum was also in positive territory in here today, and that's also a reasonably depressed commodity, although it finished out on the day down two. It is was certainly starting to steady here. There is also an upward bias evident over the course of the last year, although it is rather incremental in nature. The much bigger point is that it needs to hold that $800 level in order to confirm that support building is in fact underway. Then, when we think about what's going on in terms of the gold market, well, the consolidation has been underway now for much of the last month, and the price was down in here today about $10. This continues to look like a consolidation. The much bigger point is the extent to which it can hold the $1,350 area. That having been an area of resistance previously, should now start to offer some support. There is also a reasonably wide overextension relative to the trend mean evidence, so there is still room in which to consolidate here. And against a background where we did have a somewhat weaker environment on the precious metal markets, Bitcoin in here today was down $1,100 and has pulled back below the $10,000 level. Now, we still do have this staircase step sequence uptrend, but this was a big dynamic in here today, and it's going to have to be countermanded pretty quickly if a full reversion back towards the mean is to be avoided, and that would represent a pullback in the order of $4,000. So, and it does sound like almost funny money when you start attaching the kinds of moves that are possible in the cryptocurrencies to any kind of commentary, but that is the potential reality if the 10,000 level fails to hold. And Ethereum was also down around the $200 level in here today and starting to steady from the lower side of that intraday range towards the close in here today. But again, this is right at the region of the trend mean. It's also in the region of the upper side of the base formation. This is exactly where support needs to start to come through, and it needs to be doing it in a reasonably smart manner if the bullish hypothesis is to remain credible. It was also a rather interesting day in terms of the currency markets. When we look at what's going on in terms of the pound, well, it broke down to new lows against the dollar, and it has been falling persistently against the euro. It's down for 11 consecutive weeks. Having failed to sustain the move above $1.15, excuse me, 1 euro 15 cents, it has come all the way back down to test the lower side of the range. Every occasion it has got down to 110 and then it has steadied. So now the big question is, having put the hard Brexit back on the menu, the question that investors have to be asking themselves is, how likely is it that it is in fact going to be a realistic possibility to be actioned? We have to remember that there has been an election contest going on, and politicians have a history of promising whatever they think is likely to please voters, and that is as true of contests for party leadership as it is of general elections. Now, the next question is, what is the new Prime Minister going to in fact do? Are they willing to leave the EU in October, or are we going to kick the can further down the road? Is this entire process simply setting us up for the next election? And then that really would be a referendum on Brexit. I think that's perhaps the simplest conclusion. But against a background where we have such a deep oversold condition, I think there is scope here for some steadying. I think it's also worth paying attention to the outlook for the pound against the US dollar. And it continues to trend downwards, having failed to sustain the move above 130. There is the potential here that it is going to go back down and test the 120 area, which is almost exactly the point at which it rallied from in the immediate aftermath of the Brexit referendum back in 2016. Well, with the pound getting weaker in here, then generally speaking, that is positive for the stock market in nominal terms, and the FTSE 100 continues to bounce in here. What's, I think, particularly worth highlighting is that the FTSE 100 yields 4.75%. That strength of these companies that have got strong cash flows is one of the primary reasons why the consumer staples sector has been breaking on the upside. Now, there is a clear short-term overbought condition, but this continues to represent a bond proxy momentum-driven move. And it's also the time when I think we're probably going to see increasing commentary focusing on the dividend aristocrats. There is a fair amount of cross-pollination between the dividend aristocrats and consumer staples, and they certainly have a rather similar chart pattern, but both are breaking on the upside. And when we think about the dividend on offer, well, we can see that dividend growth rates have averaged 23% over the last 5 years. So they were only 1.55% last year. But the yield is around 2% on the dividend aristocrats. Generally speaking, the dividend tends to be rather, or the yield tends to be rather small, for the simple reason that momentum in the shares tends to keep it compressed because of the reliability of that dividend. It makes the shares more desirable. But when we think about the outlook for some of the more high-profile dividend aristocrat-type companies, well, Nestlé has been surging on the upside. And it is now really quite overextended relative to the trend mean. Now, there is still a sequence of higher reaction lows. One of the benefits of these kinds of companies is that they have long histories both of increasing their dividends but also of innovating. I saw a new story today, for example, that Nestlé has developed a new type of chocolate that does not contain sugar, that it gets its sweetness from fructose, distilled from the beans for the cocoa. And that is, I think, on the one hand, it's a really rather significant product innovation, but at the same time, it is showing a sensitivity to what is going on in terms of consumer demand. And when we look at that revolution or revolt against sugar, well, that is putting some downward pressure on prices. And it's against a background where there is ample supply. So white sugar prices continue to trend downwards. Cocoa prices, there has been some discussion in the markets about creating living wage type programs for farmers in the Ivory Coast and Ghana, so that to ensure the production quotas for cocoa are in fact hit. Now, it pulled back rather sharply yesterday, but there has been an upward bias evident for most of the year, and as long as that remains the case with a sequence of higher reaction lows, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to higher to lateral ranging. Then I think it's also worth paying some attention to what's going on with the coffee price. Coffee had traded as low as 90 cents really quite recently. We've had some rebound, and now the big question is whether the trend mean is capable of offering support where it has offered resistance on multiple occasions for nearly 2.5 years already. So the bullish scenario is very much contingent on the $1 level holding in coffee prices. Then when we think about I think when we think about the energy sector, there are two rather interesting developments. The first is natural gas, and it was down 10 cents just about in here today. It's continuing to hold the downward bias. This is despite the fact that a Category 1 hurricane has just inundated New Orleans. Most of the Gulf production of natural gas has been shut down, but because of the shale gas revolution, that has in fact represented a bearish characteristic for the price rather than a bullish one. Back in with Hurricane Katrina, and obviously that was a much larger hurricane, but natural gas prices went haywire when natural gas production was contained because of the storm. Now it just doesn't matter anymore because there is so much onshore gas, and that's a very significant phenomenon for the economy. It means that natural gas is the fuel of choice for the utility sector. It's also helping to contain the utility costs for consumers, and we can see that this is still a very clear and reasonably consistent downtrend. There is a real potential that we're going to see the price come back down to test the $2 area, and that's a significant decline from where we are right now. Then oil prices were also weaker in here today, and pulling back from the region of the trend mean. Now there is still a sequence of higher reaction lows evident since the beginning of June, so we may see some steadying around the current area. It is definitely, though, going to have to sustain a move above the trend mean to confirm more than short-term steadying. Then, when we think about what's going on in terms of the copper price, it's been strong now for 4 days in a row, but it was a little bit weaker in here today. The much bigger question is whether it is going to continue to hold the lower side of this range that it's been putting in for most of the last year. Certainly, when we look at the longer term chart, then we have type 2 top characteristics with a massive reaction against the prevailing trend in the middle of 2018 and subsequently a period of right-hand extension. At the very minimum that it's going to have to do is to sustain a move above the trend mean in order to question that this isn't still a weak environment. Then if we start to think about what in fact is driving the outlook for the Australian dollar. Historically, there has been a correlation between the Australian dollar and the iron ore price. So when we look at the longer term chart, we had a significant peak for the Australian dollar back in 2011, and then it started to really deteriorate from the beginning of 2018. Now it's the question I think many people will be asking is whether it is going to be able to sustain this move back above the 70-cent level, and most particularly back above the trend mean. Now, when we then contrast that with the iron ore price, then we're presented with a rather interesting correlation. Because I'm not sure whether we have as much back history, but we definitely go back to at 2012 with this Chinese price. Now, there is a clear difference here. The iron ore price stabilized in 2018, and now it has continued to extend this advance. Normally, that would be positive for the Australian currency, but natural gas prices are now really quite low, and natural gas is a significant export now for Australia. That is probably behind the breakdown in the correlation between the outlook for the economy and or for the currency and the commodity markets. Of course, we also have the point that there is a significant monetary and fiscal easing going on in Australia right now, and primarily aimed at supporting the consumer and the housing market. The big question is not so much about the strength or weakness of the Australian dollar, but more about the outlook for the US dollar. When we look at the dollar index, for example, it has bounced rather impressively here in again today. So we are definitely getting a lot of two-way action, and it's been a choppy environment for much of the year so far, but it is certainly finding support today in the region of the trend mean. This range will be resolved one way or the other on a break up or down. The Federal Reserve is due to cut interest rates in 2 weeks' time. Then they're going to stop decreasing the size of the balance sheet in September. The much, I guess, the other side of that equation then is what are other central banks going to do? Well, the euro is half the dollar index, and it is likely that they are going to engage in quantitative easing once more. Then we have the Japanese yen, and it spent most of May and June appreciating, but now the dollar has a higher reaction low against it. I did see an article yesterday talking about share buybacks increasing. So far, that hasn't had a measurable effect on the Nikkei, but it is right in the region of the trend mean, and it needs to demonstrate continued demand dominance. We certainly have a higher reaction low, but there's also a sequence of lower rally highs. This kind of triangular pattern generally results in a very sharp breakout because when the sequence of higher reaction lows or lower rally highs is broken, then a lot of shorts start to get pressured, or indeed a lot of stops tend to get pressured. So now the big question is whether we're going to see the yen weaken through or I guess weaken further, and the Nikkei sustain a move above the 22,000 level. The 20,000 level has been a meaningful area of support over the course of the last 18 months, and it represents the upper side of the long-term base formation. So it would certainly help to bolster the argument that Japan is in a recovery scenario, provided it holds that level. The second section index, though, is pulling back from the region of the trend mean, and there has been a downward bias to trading for 18 months. So that is rather sapping the outlook for Japanese equities. This continues to represent a corrective phase, and it rather does suggest that the Bank of Japan is going to have to be more activist if it's going to support the economy. Now, when we think about what's going on in India, what's particularly interesting is that there is a subset of the banking sector which is really quite oversold, and it is those that have been got themselves into trouble by being too aggressive on the lending on the lending side, or they've become over-leveraged in housing finance. What we are starting to see in Yes Bank are stabs on the upside. There was the upside queue reversal at the end of June. There was a positive pop on the upside about 2 weeks ago, and it was up about 11% in here today. It's now back above the 100 rupee level. We're going to have the earnings tomorrow, and the big question is whether the announcements that have been made by the new CEO are in fact true. That has been the big point of discussion among a lot of analysts. As the new CEO, he basically went through a process of just writing off everything, and that was one of the reasons why the share cratered. Now, there's a member of the RBI sitting on the board of the bank, so if they have made misstatements, then that is going to have a feedback loop to the credibility of the central bank. So that's part of the reason why some of the shorts were closed in here today. If the earnings tomorrow come out positive, then we could get upside follow-through. So these are the kinds of situations that do evolve in India. It is a high-growth market, and in a high-growth market, it just happens that some companies do become over-leveraged. And the bigger difference, though, is that when banks can grow their deposits by 25% a year, that kind of deposit and loan growth is completely alien to the Western banking sector. India is one of the highest growth banking areas in the world, and the performance of the banks has been a lead indicator for the wider market now for years. And the Bombay Banks Index is still consolidating above the previous high. So, yes, there is a short-term overbought condition, but this still remains a bullish environment overall. And I think that contrasts rather well with what's going on in China. The market was pretty much unchanged in here today. China has got a significant growth slowdown. The best of its growth is probably behind it. It's likely to have slowing growth for the foreseeable future. Leverage ratios have expanded considerably, and then they have a demographic time bomb in front of them. So I've seen plenty of evidence of China importing workers from Africa and from Southeast Asia, particularly into Guangzhou. But the other point is that they're going to have to commit to continued reforms if they're going to create the kind of growth that is required to keep a rest of population under control. And that's a big question because it is probably going to entail a lot more lending and the potential for that lending to get out of control again. So I think China is a more risky market now than it has been in a really quite considerable time. If we go back and think about the banking sector, well, non-performing loans in Europe have become less of a problem. The total outstanding is about half what it was back in the teeth of the crisis. What we are seeing increasing evidence of is at least some steadying in the region of the lower side of this long-term evolving base formation. But the index is going to have to sustain a move back above the trend mean in order to really demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. So there is certainly a lot going on in here. Meanwhile, on Wall Street, it was a reasonably quiet day, and the S&P 500 was down a bit. Again, here is another market which has a short-term overbought condition. But rangers are explosions waiting to happen, and this does look increasingly like a really rather significant breakout. So I really don't anticipate much more than some consolidation. The bond markets were in negative territory in here today, but again, not in a dynamic manner. The consolidation that we've seen so far has been reasonably modest because the simple fact of the matter is that with the Federal Reserve on the cusp of engaging in additional monetary and fiscal easing, well, monetary easing and the federal government continuing to run deficits, well, that is likely to create a market for bonds. And this remains a reasonably consistent uptrend. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.